and probably penicillin or something of that sort will help that greatly. What it is to say is, why were you susceptible at that point in time to that infection?
Yes.
Okay? It's not to say that there was no infection and that the cure of that, the immediate cure of that infection is not an antibiotic. It's to say, look, if you wish, particularly if this isn't the first time you've come down with a serious upper respiratory infection, this is a way of looking behind that to see, perhaps, why are the lungs particularly susceptible to these kinds of things.
It's a matter of looking to see why your defenses or your armor had a chink in it at that place.
So it does not deny the standard causes of disease. It simply says, if you wish, especially if they're starting to develop a pattern of disease, you might want to look behind those causes, and you might find something very helpful that will break up the entire pattern. Meanwhile, you're taking the antibiotic or whatever it may be to deal with the immediate causes.
And there is one other thing on this. Remember that if you do find the cause and you do deal with it, because you have had a chink in your, I hate to use the word psychic armor, it's not the right term, because you have had a chink in your spiritual armor in that place for so many years, the possibility is that you are going to have to work all the harder at making sure that you do not allow a repetition of the situations, because you are going to be slightly weaker there for the rest of your life spiritually in that particular spot. Do you know what I'm saying? In other words, you have a place that's not quite as strong spiritually as the others are. You were going to say something. Our friend here, yes.
It's interesting that he mentioned ulcers, which used to be very common in the United States, but really, practically, the incidence is much, much lower. And no one really knows why. And the same with
I don't think they've got nearly so much worry.
Well, although the other diseases are much higher that are associated with worry, like heart disease.
But heart disease, according to our system, is the result, the end result of any one or two of the organs not being safe, not being at peace with themselves. Because everything affects the heart and ultimately the gallbladder. I've often thought of the system as the captain of a ship is the heart. You know, the captain commands the ship and the commander runs it. I was in the Royal Navy, so I know what I'm talking about on this. The heart is the captain, and the gallbladder is the commander. And anything that affects any of the other organs will mess up those two to a certain extent. So you've only got to have got one or two slightly out of whack for the heart to start getting messed up. It's not necessarily just the worry.
Oh, that reminds me of something. When we speak of an organ, we don't just mean the physical organ.
Yes.
Although
we do include that.
Yeah. There's a whole energy system similar to, and in some cases, incorporating the acupuncture meridian for that organ, but also having some other branches and things you don't find on normal acupuncture charts. So yeah. We're speaking of a whole set of meridians of energy that go to all kinds of parts of the body besides just the organ we're mentioning here. And frequently what you will find is that you can get clues of things before they get, let us say, to the anatomical heart. You can get clues of things going on that are leading in that direction from stray aches and pains and stiffnesses and things along the heart meridian.
Yes.
Okay.
There are... It is said in the East that there are three bodies of the Buddha we see, the spirit of the Buddha that comes from the Buddha we see, or comes from the cosmic Buddha to the Buddha we see, and then there is the cosmic Buddha. Translated into Christian terms, God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Ghost. But Buddhism takes it even further. Each organ has three bodies. It has the organ that we see, i.e. the physical stomach. Then there is the psychological organ, which is the worry, which can act on that stomach, or the peace, which can act on that stomach. And then there is the spiritual organ, which is this lovely flux that runs through it and which you can actually feel after you have done a lot of meditation. So every one of them has these three spiritual bodies. And after a bit, I've had people say to me when they've been meditating, but it's as though I can talk to my organs. Yes, you do. They have, it's on the second body, this one that can tell you, well, don't do this or don't do that with me and I won't. It sounds a little odd that one can talk to one's organs, but one actually can if you get down to it very, very, very seriously.
It also appears that the parts of the body have memories, almost yes. memories of their own. When you unlock some of the tensions that have been in them for years, you get coming into your consciousness memories of things which caused those tensions to lock in initially.
Well, that was what I was talking about with the vomiting yesterday as a result of the, which they thought was a...
Which also has implications for surgery. We've found that surgery may be necessary in a number of situations, and it is. And certainly people here have no objections to visiting a surgeon when it's necessary.
I've done it a number of times.
The thing we do is afterwards do a number of things to try to, as it were, explain to the organs or parts of the body or meridians that were cut in the surgery and actually feed love into those areas, because the organs or the parts of the body seem to have a very literal mind, if you will, if you, you know, anthropomorphize them into little people.
What did you do that for?
Why did you hurt me like that? Okay. Why did you allow this person to cut into me?
That, I think, can be dealt with. I think can be dealt with by a surgeon explaining with great care and respect to the person concerned. I wouldn't say that except that the operation that was done on me as a baby, which was the one that resulted in my thinking about the asphyxiation I told you about yesterday, that gave me that allergy. That allergy would not have occurred if somebody could have told a 3-month-old baby what was happening. Now, the more explanation that has been given to me over various surgery that has been done, the less problems I have had on this afterwards. So the attitude of mind, forgive me if there are any gentlemen or ladies present who do surgery here, but the attitude of mind which is you are the lame and you are the patient, you cannot understand, is a very dangerous one in this respect. I think if you are to really deal with this safely, you have got to be willing to talk to the person as a fellow human being about what is taking place. So that you, the whole of you, because in one sense the organ is the whole of you, can understand and not feel that it isn't good enough to know what's happening to it, or isn't adult enough to know what's happening to it.
That also is useful if you can find the causes of things before doing the surgery. I recall a seminar was similar to this last year, and there was a lady we were talking to about something in particular, and she was having a physical defect corrected by plastic surgery, and the surgery, there were all kinds of complications afterwards. Not that there was anything wrong with the surgery, but the wound just would not heal properly, and it turns out that the initial cause of the defect when she was very young was that, I've forgotten the details, but in any case, as a young child, she'd sort of bit on something that was live electrically, and it caused an electrical burn. Okay, and we were sort of dealing with the meridians that had went through this area of the body, and I kept getting a feeling off of this of a repetition. I kept getting this area sort of saying to me, why did you do this again? And so I started asking her, do you remember, you know, what they did when they went to repair this? And she started talking about various things, and I said, I keep getting the... Did they use an electric cautery on you? And she said, yes, they did. And she, all of a sudden, something, she started jerking, and the memory of it came back to her. She said, my God, they did it again, didn't they? Now, if she'd known that, been more sensitive to that, she could have told them, don't use an electric cautery on this thing.
Don't repeat
because
what
it repeated
did.
The... In Stop some sense, me. It repeated the original trauma. Yeah. It's very practical in that sense.
And that's why we're saying this is a teachable skill. It's not got anything to do with the laying on of hands or that sort of thing. It's a completely teachable skill. Buddhism has always been very practical on that level. And their doctors have understood it and been very practical. That was one of the finest examples we've ever had. Mm. And it was exactly at this time last year, the same seminar.
I believe it was a mercy.
Yeah. And she got this lip poor soul, which was very, very bad. She'd put an electric plug in her mouth.
As a kid.
As a small child. So you have to be... It's very advisable for you to talk to your doctor if you're going to have surgery and find out what he proposes to do in every respect so that you don't maybe have a repeat performance. I very nearly had something like that happen. They operated on me for an ovarian tumor in Japan. And they were talking to me about what they needed to do before they got started. Now we're going to give you a very large dose of Epsom salts. And I almost lifted off the bed. And the doctor looked at me and said, what's wrong? And I have a very, very bad history, which I'd forgotten about, of my mother, who had fed me on the stuff from about the age of one until I left home about the age of 18 or 20 every day of the week. And it took me years upon years to get my bowels normal. And I'd forgotten about this because this was years and years ago, and he suddenly mentions this stuff. And everything in me exploded, no. You're getting into a state, I don't know what we're going to do. I said, I don't care, be damned, you're not taking this thing out. I'm not going to let you do this. Unfortunately, he was not the variety you could talk with and explain to, but they did use something different.
Yeah, well, there's more than one way of doing a thing. You know.
There's more than one way of doing a thing, yeah. And perhaps if a patient acts up, there is a very good reason for doing it.
It's dangerous to immediately assume that the person is being unreasonable, because it may be that one of their organs is talking very loud
and saying, don't,
something has happened to
loud
them.
And clear.
Yeah, and it needs respect to be able to find out, well, what's going on here.
Now, also, you may find that's true with them, that they have areas in themselves that act up unreasonably.
Well, I've been such a model patient in this doctor's brain box, and suddenly I do lift off on the suggestion of Epsom salts. But I'm awfully glad he told me.
Fortunate he mentioned what he was going to use.
Yeah. Or the thing was going to happen again. And it had taken me the best part of 20 years to get cured. So, remember that the organs do have memories. And that comes under preventative medicine, preventative meditation. Meditation for the finding of causes of illness is somewhat, it's not different, but it's, supposing you're born with an illness and you've got to learn how to handle it or got to learn how to live with it, which seems to be a lot more unfair. The world seems to be a very unfair place because you were born with a specific tendency. I was born with a tendency to diabetes, this sort of thing. Supposing this is what has happened to you, and you've got to find out a reason or a cause for this, and perhaps a means of handling it, because I now have no signs of diabetes at all. And the answer again comes through going through the meditation. All right, what happened? Not this time round, but the time round before. Or maybe the time round before that. And this again is where the sleuthing comes in the past lives. But remember that at all times you do not undertake meditation in order to find out the cause of illness or in order to get better. You undertake the meditation because you want to get back to that lovely rarefied state where you are one with the cosmic Buddha, because that is your true natural state. And if you are in that state, both you will not be ill and you will never die in the very real sense. This bunch of flesh and bones will fall off, but the true you, since that is where you abide, does not die. You just stay constantly. The next time round appears. Do you understand what I'm saying?
That again is why we spent the first half of the seminar talking about those kinds of things. And now we're getting down to illness and tomorrow to death. There's a bind, unless you can't do it for that purpose alone. If you do this just in order to understand illness or just in order to understand death, it doesn't work. It's those things come, yes.
They are the bonuses, the byproducts.
If you set out specifically to get that, nothing happens.
Because the whole purpose of meditation is defeated there, because instead of learning the reason or the meaning of life and death, you're going out from the attitude of attachment. How can I escape it?
And you can't escape living.
You can't escape it.
I talk to people, I can't get up in the morning, I just can't face the day. What they're actually telling me is, I can't stand life. How do I escape life? If I come to your monastery, can you teach me to escape life? And the answer is, no, I'll teach you how to live it. But I can't teach you how to escape it. And I'll teach you how to deal with it. And I'll make it worth doing and I'll make it enjoyable. But I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to teach you how to escape it. For a start, I couldn't if I would. And secondly, I don't see why I should. There's just no point. Any other questions on this? Because we've got to have feedback back and forth. Yes, please go ahead.
Considering logging memories, as you talked about, could you discuss that in the concept of transplantation of logging between human beings?
That worries the living daylights out of me. That's the only comment I can say. It really worries the living daylights out of me. I haven't ever had an organ transplant in Touchwood. And I don't know quite what would happen. It worries me. I can't tell you why.
This isn't to say we're opposed to it. It's just
I'm not opposed to it. I'm just
along these lines.
I just don't know.
There have been stories about people with heart transplants who feel as if, you know, they do have somebody else's heart.
I am not prepared to say it is wrong. I am not prepared to say it is wrong, because anything that is a genuine attempt to help another being cannot be wrong. That is not done out of wickedness, it is done out of love. It can't be wrong. But with regard to the karmic consequence, I don't know. I look at it from this point of view. Since we are all part of the cosmic Buddha, since every one of us is part of the cosmic Buddha, and since we do pick up bits and pieces of other people's karma until we have these critical masses which make up ourselves, it shouldn't really upset us too much to pick up somebody else's lump of karma from somewhere else. But the thing that goes through my head is, since that was not how it was originally arranged, and I am not the arranger, isn't it perhaps likely to cause some problems if the karma we pick up just doesn't match up in any way with the critical mass we've got? I don't know if I've made that. I think there could be an awful fight going on there, and maybe that's why sometimes hearts are rejected. I don't know. It's just a theory.
Yeah. I mean, of course, the implication of that is if some of these things could be understood, maybe, we don't know, but maybe it could help with accepting them.
Yes, it could help accepting them no end. Yes. But nothing that is an attempt to help mankind is wrong in Buddhism. So you cannot say that it is morally wrong to transplant a heart in Buddhism. One of the beauties of Buddhism is you can never use morality as a means of saying anything's wrong. because that's not how it works. Morality, you are not bound in the sense of made guilty by morality, as you are by certain other teachings. If it is an attempt to help mankind, it is good. Now let's see how to do it better. That's all that will be done with it. How can we do this? I think your point was well taken, Daisy, that perhaps if you knew more about the basic makeup of the person whose heart you are taking, so that the other one could integrate it more with his own stuff, maybe it wouldn't be rejected nearly so much. Yes.
In the Middle Ages, there were certain temperaments, melancholic and phlegmatic. Yeah. But did those at all occur?
Yes, they join up with this completely. Yes, they do. It's very interesting.
In fact, there is a whole mental side of these things as well, in terms of potential mental illness and its causes, which go to war. And is not necessarily, the events spoken of here are not necessarily of this lifetime, okay?
Yes.
Whereas the ones in the previous table were primarily of this lifetime, or not necessarily, the ones in this one are often of previous lifetimes, although they may be in this lifetime as well. And the Buddhist theory of mental illness is that it results not so much from allowing certain kinds of emotions to affect one, or getting into certain kinds of emotional states too deeply, but rather from doing things which cause suffering to other people and to oneself. For instance, and these are also associated with the organs and their meridians. The same set of organ meridians that we talked about before. For instance, the lungs and the lung meridian. Well, not only are they influenced by what we talked about before, but also by engaging in deception or lying. And the theory of this is that will eventually lead to various forms of paranoia. Not necessarily in this lifetime.
It's interesting that it's a whole different view of morality. See, they laugh you to scorn in the East if you talk about morality. And just tell you bluntly that you don't understand it. Because the only reason for keeping precepts is because you destroy yourself as well as other people, both physically and mentally, which makes a totally different attitude of mind to morality. We think of it much too shallowly.
I have a question about lying. I'm not sure lying is bad. I give a very extreme example. Nazi soldiers came house searching for Jews, but often happened in Holland.
Nazi soldiers.
Well,
yes.
There was a lot of talking between theological people about it, but he said, well, it is normal common sense to say, no Jews in this house. I think that's not bad. What do you think?
Well, I know that there are occasions when, in order not to have a greater ill happen, one has to break a precept. That is one of the more, well, it is known as the Kokoro Kanashiku in Japanese, the great grief, that in order to prevent what is really an irreparable wrong, one has to temporarily create a temporary wrong. But you still take the consequences of doing it.
Yeah, but the consequence of saying, well, we have some Jews in houses.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. You still take the consequences, though. You still lie.
Still
don't pretend to yourself you didn't lie.
Of course, but I have a problem with lying.
You see, things aren't, in this system,
things aren't good
or bad. Yeah. See, they simply, there's a bunch of things, and they simply have consequences. It's not that lying is good or lying is bad. Lying has certain consequences. Now, if because of something much more important. You are willing to take the consequences of lying. In this case, you've got to start remembering who you've told and who you haven't about who exactly is in the house. Okay, you start looking over your shoulder, right? About who you've told, and you start getting worried, etc. Now, I think those consequences are worth taking in this case.
And I would take them.
And I would take them, too.
That's not...
All that Buddhism says is lying has certain kinds of consequences. Now, if you're willing to take those consequences in order to do a greater good, fine.
And if you
but
do
you
it for that purpose,
and
if you do it for that purpose, it's unlikely that you're going to end up with the extreme consequences, because
yeah.
you're only doing it for a moment as an expedient. But supposing you become a pathological liar, then you've got a totally different kettle of fish, and that's what we're talking about.
That's when you get to the point where you can't tell the difference between the truth and the lie.
But I have got to the state from meditation now that even if I only start to slightly exaggerate, my lungs start tightening. Now, I understand that as a warning. Know what you're doing. Don't go any further. But I tell you quite truthfully, if the Nazis were to come back, and if they were to ask me if I got any Jews in this house, I'd say no. And I'd be the biggest liar under the sun. Okay?
Thanks.
Yeah.
Heart and the heart meridian, the taking of life in all forms, and the turning away from one's true self are the things which damage it along these lines. The end result being basically emotional breakdown, psychological and emotional disintegration and breakdown.
Now, I'm sure you've heard that when somebody has got no center in himself, when he can't find, when he's sort of fragmented all outside of himself, then he has a complete and absolute breakdown. So long as you know the center within yourself, which I'm calling the cosmic Buddha or the state of flux, that cannot happen.
The gallbladder and the gallbladder meridian, any act which causes tension to another being in any form or causes tension to oneself, it's very, very general.
Yes.
And the result is, you know, the result on the mild level is the same as almost the act, it's general tension and anxiety. In the extreme, to manic behavior or manic depressive cycles or to extreme depression.
If I can just for a moment be topical, I'm sure you've all heard of this ghastly tragedy at the People's Temple down in San Francisco. In Buddhism, you are not allowed to become a parish priest until you know for yourself the cosmic Buddha. If you don't know the cosmic Buddha, i.e. you don't know this center, you are not centered, you are unfit to be a parish priest. Now, frequently I have noticed with, and I'm sure this is true of Buddhism too, I'm not trying to be rude to any other religion, but I have noticed, especially with the newer types of religions, that the ones that tend to have no superiors. For example, I've got the bishop down in Los Angeles, I've got the virtually the equivalent of the College of Cardinals in Tokyo, and I got the patriarch sitting in Yokohama. In other words, when you become your own god, there is a tremendous tendency not to rely on what is within yourself, in the sense of not to rely on the cosmic Buddha or not to rely on the true God, but to think of yourself as the one and only who is in charge. Now, when you do that, you start to fragment. And the more you fragment, the more comes the anxiety of, I am in charge of this, I have got to make everything very, very good, I've got to make sure that everything is all right. And every little thing that comes in on you starts making you more and more scared, because you know that you are just one human being. And the more that happens, the more paranoid you become, until I think you end up like Jim Jones. That's what I am seeing of this. Somebody who was extraordinarily good, who was placed on an almost messiah basis by his people, knew that he was not, probably had not actually found this inside himself, or because he had, then finding himself in this position, realizing that he couldn't handle that, gets more and more paranoid and ends up like this. My personal opinion is that any time you have someone who makes himself head of an organization without somebody else over him, runs this risk. That somehow fits into what you just said there, very accurately. I don't know. I feel very, very sorry for the whole business.
Well, it comes here on this table under the brain. I mean, clinging to one's own opinions and deluding oneself or deluding others, the results of which, again, become delusion and paranoia.
You see, every time, any time you're going to have tiny little things of the world coming in at you, if you have not found the peace within yourself, they are going to fragment you. We have dozens of government officials snooping down our backs, building inspectors, the people from Sacramento, see if the school's being done right, are you keeping the records right? We could all turn around and say, get out of here, we want peace and quiet. Yes, we do. But if you found the peace and quiet within yourself, they're not going to bug you. People have often said to me, why do you have people turn up from the university and bother you when you want to be meditating? Well, I'd be rather upset if you didn't turn up. Because if I can't stand the world outside, what on earth am I doing? I've got to be able to stand it.
Meditation is not the growing of hothouse roses.
No, it's the growing some very substantially healthy plants that can live in about 20 degrees below. It's not the same thing at all. I beg your pardon?
Just commenting on the temperature.
But do you understand what I'm saying? Just hit me. Yeah. We're listening to that table, which I wrote a couple or so years ago. Yeah. But that's exactly what's happened.
Interestingly, the sort of mild first signs under the brain has to do with hyperactivity and headaches and feelings of being sort of forced and rushed upon, which would fit with what you said about
It's a very, very sad situation.
The liver meridian, doing violence, particularly violence that's done in anger, initial results being insomnia and ending up with the kind of depression that's the violence the depression that comes from repressed violence. Violence being done to one. So, probably also paranoia would come in there to a certain extent. Pancreas and the meridian associated with it comes from insulting or denigrating other people or tearing them down, belittling other people.
It's interesting how you damage yourself every time you damage somebody else. It's almost as though physical illness is the result of what you do passively. And mental illness is the result of what you do actively.
Mm-hmm. which comes, again, from the result of that being people that people turn around and do that to you. The end result of which can be either a depression or paranoia. Again. The stomach meridian, basically, sort of the opposite of the pancreas. It's inflating oneself rather than tearing others down primarily. Inflating oneself, also stinginess or meanness in the sense of not giving of oneself. Again, insomnia, worry, in the ultimate extreme paranoia again. Intestine meridians, primarily just plain ordinary greed, jealousy of others, coveting of others. In the short run, or in the mild situation, sort of constipation and sort of weakness, lack of energy. In the long run, possibly paranoia. The brain we've discussed. The sexual organs and the meridians associated with them. Again, indulging in sexual activity for other than reasons of true love, other than reasons of true love. By indulgence, we don't mean just any sexual activity. We mean what most people would call overindulgence, or indulgence for using other people, not for love with other people.
It's the difference in the use, in the marriage vows of "with my body I thee worship" or "with my body I thee use." That is the basic difference of indulgence.
Yeah.
Exploitation.
And
the result of it being very, very simple, that is to say, becoming attached to or dependent on continuing sexual indulgence and
yeah,
gradually possibly shifting over into various forms of sexuality which cause more and more harm, going further and further afield from the sexuality that's involved in true love, requiring more and more and going further and further off. Kidney meridian. Any type of act which causes fear in others, which again causes fear in oneself, the obvious ultimate result of that would be paranoia.
Incidentally, I would like to add in on that very last one something which occurred to me we might have put in, but I'm not sure whether we should or shouldn't. This, by the way, is part of the manuscript for the Book of Life. And that is pornography. Real pornography is cruelty, or anything that creates fear or anxiety in a person, which is exactly why pornographic comics are so nasty for young people to see, or pornographic films. And anyone who indulges in either making or selling that sort of thing, it would be interesting to do a survey. I don't know if you ever could, because I don't know if you ever get a hold of the people concerned.
Hard to get,
but it would be interesting to see what sort of us, how many of them died or had serious kidney diseases. I think it would be very considerable. I mean, these are things that you would have to do controlled studies on. You can't just throw them out as theories. But it'd be interesting to find out. Everything has its consequence, yeah. In other words. Everything has its price.
Yeah. And again,
it's got nothing
things
to do with the morality of the thing.
We're not saying any of these things are right or wrong, as in the gentleman's example of lying to the Nazis.
It's not a matter of morality.
And there are a lot of less extreme examples. I mean, there are times when people here will knowingly overwork themselves and take the consequences of that because
sick.
It's something that they feel is more important that needs
and
that
just got
to
be
done.
Yeah.
Other things of that sort.
No, there is no. That is what is meant in Buddhism when there is no right and wrong. It does not mean great. Now I can get out and do exactly what I want, which is what Beatnik Zen and Beatnik Buddhism was talking about. That was what they thought. And that, of course, came out entirely of the fact that the people who were teaching it couldn't speak English adequately. I was saying, but there is no such thing as morality. There is no such thing as right and wrong. And a bunch of my generation said, wow, and got out there and made the situation far worse than it was before they got weaving. It is simply, if you do such and such a thing, you will put tension on such and such an organ, which will open up a chink in your armor to cause such and such an illness. Now, if you are willing to let that happen, that's fine.
There's no morality.
There's no judgment in this. It's just consequence, which is a very different thing. Yes, go ahead.
Two things that seem to conflict in my, from what you're saying and what I've learned without having any medical background, hereditary diseases, things that are genetic.
Yes.
And then the kind of behavior that a child develops because of the way his parents treat him when he's very small. Mm-hmm. And then what you were talking about yesterday and karma and how that passes on. Not necessary heredity or environment.
Would you like to try that one?
I'm not sure I understand the question. Could you say something about it?
Well, I'm thinking about the different causes, because right. something that's genetic right. or something that's caused by your early environment
okay.
is not the same thing as what you talked about yesterday, which was a kind of cause that comes from past lives.
It certainly could be. I wouldn't. I can't make any generalization. But if you wanted to look to some sort of an ultimate cause, let's say for a genetic problem, you could see if something couldn't be found further back than this lifetime.
Yes.
And in some cases, one does find things of that sort. And in some cases, the finding and dealing with those sorts of things seems to have some effect. Not necessarily completely removing the thing, but of ameliorating it, making it easier to deal with in this life. Sometimes, if you look to the ultimate causes of, let's say, things which were created by a person's parents or someone else in early childhood, you get back to the actual events that created them. And sometimes, by understanding those events from the point of view of the others that created them, that can deal with it right there. Or sometimes it appears that there was a reason the person was born in that particular environment in the first place.
And that is something that I was going to talk about tomorrow with regard to death, and that is people who seem to have got something genetically wrong, as it is called, but which in actual fact have got something that they've inherited as past karma. I can give you one case in point of somebody who was born with a particularly long neck that always seemed to be slightly twisted. And when they had got back into their meditation, they discovered they'd been hung the previous time round. And the contortions the poor wretch went through was terrible. And now his neck looks normal.
What about the correction of genetic deficiency due to genetic surgery, by the use of genetic surgery?
That you would have to answer.
What do you mean, what about it?
How would that affect the karma? Working through?
I don't know how it would.
I think in the years to come we'll find out what the consequences of fiddling with genes are.
You see, you sound like that would be a negative thing.
Well, I just think it's going to be a big thing.
I think it's going to be big. I think this, so long as it is done from the point of view of I want to help beings, it can't be negative. That much I know. It's what really causes damage is doing it from wrong purposes, for wrong reasons. If a doctor is genuinely trying to help mankind, nothing can go wrong with what he's doing.